connected by purpose, driven by passion. This is Children's Healthcare Canada's Spark Conversations podcast series.
Connected by purpose, driven by passion, this is Children's Healthcare Canada Spark Conversations podcast series. Welcome to Spark Conversations, Children's Healthcare Canada's monthly podcast series. At the crossroads of children's healthcare, system improvement, and leadership, Spark Conversations is a solution-focused podcast that connects the child and youth health community with system leaders who tackle wicked problems and discuss ideas to inform the development of innovative and integrated systems to serve children and youth. Spark Conversations is one component of our Spark Knowledge Mobilization Program. Spark is the shared platform for advocacy, research, and knowledge. I'm Dr. Catherine Smart, and today I'm delighted to be speaking with Allison Quigley. Allison has an impressive story. She is the Senior Vice President, Patient Care Services, and Master Plan Clinical Lead at Trillium Health Partners. Since 2011, Allison has had a series of progressive operational leadership positions at Trillium Health Partners, including Associate Vice President in 2013, leading women and children's health, mental health, laboratory medicine and genetics, pharmacy, diagnostic imaging. She's been vice president, overseeing the emergency department and urgent care, and leading the medicine program, ICU, and patient flow and operations. Since February 2020, Allison has been serving as senior vice president in patient care services and was appointed clinical lead for the substantive master plan project. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Allison has had the privilege of leading the Pandemic Clinical Operations Center for THP, one of the hospital's hardest hit during the pandemic. In keeping with her passion for women and children's health, Allison joined the board of Children's Healthcare Canada in 2018. Today, her and I are going to discuss an extremely important topic and one certainly close to my heart, and that is the delivery of children's health in the community. Hello, Allison. It's wonderful to hear all these amazing things about you and the insights you're going to bring to us today. I'd like to welcome you to Smart Conversations.
Thanks very much, Catherine. Really happy to be here.
I've heard you speak very eloquently about the experiences of children's healthcare in the community hospitals during COVID. We heard a lot about children's tertiary and quaternary hospitals during the pandemic, and we still do, and we know those places are important. But we also know that 60 to 80% of children are seen outside of these settings, and that can sometimes be lost in the conversation. Hearing how THP lost your child health teams during the pandemic and now have to rebuild is a compelling narrative. And I think it's something we need to think about as we move towards imagining a truly integrated and innovated children's healthcare system, one deserving of a national conversation. So I'm looking forward to exploring that with you today. So I'd like to start out by asking you about your experience. During COVID, we know that many pediatric units and community hospitals were shut down as staff had to be redeployed to support adults and the adult aspects of their hospitals. How was Trillium Health Partners impacted by COVID? And where are you at now in terms of resuming your services for children and youth?
Thank you for the introduction, Catherine, and for the question. I think, with respect to Trillium Health Partners, we are a very large community academically affiliated hospital, and prior to the pandemic, saw 220,000 people through our emergency departments every year. So very, very busy, interesting community. Of course, Mississauga, which is just a little bit west of Toronto, for those who don't know, we have a population of about 1 million folks. And with respect to the pandemic, we had the highest number of confirmed cases provincially. So what did that look like for us? That was about 7,000 COVID patients since the beginning of the pandemic in February, March of 2020. We've had and lost over 800 folks who have died with COVID. For us, in the different waves, there was always a different sort of a challenge, if you will, with each wave. We did in wave five, which was, I guess, January of 2022, transfer out at that point over 650 patients due to overcapacity. We had 50 hospital beds on average closed every day due to IPAC. We have an aging infrastructure on one of our sites in particular, and so very challenging to maintain IPAC practices, really challenged us. From a surgical perspective, we have 10,000 surgical cases beyond our target wait times right now. And of course, we're seeing a preponderance of folks coming into our emergency department seeking support for mental health related issues. So for us, it has been a real challenge. And there, unlike in flu years, of course, there's not been a reprieve where you can really catch your breath. So it's been quite a challenge for us. I would say that wave five back in January, February of this year was probably the most challenging time of my career, followed by all of the flurry of activity that happened in wave one when we really didn't know what was going to happen. We ran the command center 7 days a week, and it was really tough at the height of the wave five. We had 350 or so patients with COVID. So that presented for us really significant challenges in terms of where people could get care. And in Ontario, in the GTA, there was a central command center through which the directives to transfer patients of all different phenotypes. So we transferred out alternate level of care patients to rehab facilities, for example. We transferred out acute medicine, we transferred out acute COVID, and we transferred out critical care adults. And so it was a really interesting time to try and balance care for everybody. And I think as I was reflecting on the conversations, Catherine, we were going to have today, it really is about how we provide care for everybody. And I think that one of the toughest moments was when we closed to pediatric care on our within our walls, obviously not in the emergency departments, but from an inpatient perspective. And that decision was taken certainly not lightly, and at a time also when we closed our services for cardiac patients and for stroke patients. And we have a number of regional programs that we run out of our large hospital. Cardiac is one, and stroke neurology is another. And so that was really tough to think about doing that, and wanting to make sure that there was access for those people elsewhere in the system, specifically related to children's inpatient care. That day that we did close, and we closed for, I think, just over a couple of weeks in total, we knew that there was capacity in the system. And at that point in time, that was, you know, probably the system at its systemness best. And we just worked really closely with our partners to make sure that kids got the care that they needed in a timely fashion.
Wow, what an experience, and what an amazing example of working with community and partners, as you described. I can't even imagine the communication and the logistics that went into that, but just also how challenging that must have been just emotionally for you and your colleagues as you had to make those decisions about where to focus, making sure that everyone, as you said, in your community was getting what they needed. From where you sit, what do you think are the important health systems issues to consider as we continue to develop community-based hospital services for children and youth and try to strengthen those linkages across the continuum of care?
Yeah, I think, first of all, all patients are waiting too long for care right now, and costs are increasing at an unsustainable rate. We've got healthcare professionals who are exiting the industry. We certainly have seen that with the teams that provide care, who love to provide care to our children and youth. And we are just so deeply fragmented right now. And I think our care provision is really very hospital centric. And I think inequities also across the platform have really challenged us. So What do I think we need to think about? We need to think about how we are considering care across the continuum. and primary care linkages with hospital-based services is important. But I think one of the nicest things in a pre-pandemic world, and one of the greatest successes of children's health care, has been that really there is a decreased demand for pediatric inpatient beds. And that's because we've got really great outpatient services, and we've got really dedicated providers who are able to provide that care in an outpatient basis. And, you know, that saves the capacity for kids who, of course, really need hospitalization. I think we will benefit from continuing work on lining up our services across the continuum so that it is seamless, and so that there is a really nice and elegant flow between levels of care. So when I think, for example, of our partners at SickKids down the road, what they do should be very complementary to the services that we offer, whether it's inpatient care or outpatient care, and there shouldn't be a gap. And we learned that well in the neonatal world, lining up scope of services in a very elegant way. And I think there's opportunity to do more work there.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think, you know, it's some of the themes that we're hearing, right? Communication, working in teams, being creative, and finding the way to leverage everybody to do what they do best, and to make it seamless for providers and for patients. And I think that's really what we're aiming for. So from your perspective, at that systems level, as we strive towards that style of care, what do you think we could be doing better?
Well, I think the scope of services is a really important piece, but I am a very strong believer in form follows function, and I think we need to understand who we're serving. So, you know, for us in Mississauga, we know that our community is going to grow by 45% over the next number of years, and so for us to think about the services that we provide. We know what that is going to mean for seniors, and we know also that what that's going to mean for an increased number of children in our community. Children who are not born in Canada, we need to think about how we are reaching and who we're reaching and who we're not providing care to. You know, our mission at this hospital is a new kind of healthcare for a healthier community, which lines up really nicely to work done with investing in healthy futures. And to do that, we really need to be thinking about investing in children's health and starting, you know, that first 1,000 days to the very best of our ability, and thinking about how we really pay focused attention as a priority and not as an afterthought.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Of course, as a pediatrician, what you're saying is close to my heart. And I agree with you. I think often one of the most important questions is who's not receiving care and why? And I think for children and youth, often their challenges and their family challenges can be invisible. So it's wonderful to hear that your organization is taking that systems level view and really trying to understand who you're trying to serve and what those barriers to care might be, and how we can make sure that we're making sure every child and youth has that opportunity for health and to access what they need to get there.
It will be a challenge for us. You know, I think we've been doing some work as we refreshed our strategy in 2018, and we now have 51% of people living in low or very low income neighborhoods, which of course impacts health in so many ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And trying to get upstream as to address things like poverty are often really challenging. But you're right, we see those results in the system. And I think we need to be starting to think about health much more holistically so that we can have a much more preventative lens and be more upstream working with people there as well. What do you think are ways that we might be able to leverage virtual care to reach more patients and also to provide some of that complex team-based care that some children and youth need?
Yeah, we, you know, it's been an experience, hasn't it? The benefits to virtual care for kids obviously are largely logistical. So things like travel time and missed work, less missed work, decreasing no-shows and that sort of thing. And I think that virtual care is really great for some things. Lab follow-up, for example. We learned a lot about virtual care during COVID in terms of what works and what doesn't. And I think that our pediatrician colleagues in particular would say that it's very difficult to measure some things virtually. So needing things, for example, like height and weight and tracking developmental milestones, blood pressure, those kinds of things. For teenagers, of course, mental health screening and conversations about sexuality are more challenging when done so virtually, because you can't control who's in the room. So, you know, there are pluses and minuses. I think one of the interesting things is around changes in Ontario to physician fee codes, which come into effect on December 1st. And I think in anticipation of that, most of our pediatricians are bringing children back to our outpatient services. And so there's a lesson in there somehow, and striking a balance, I think, is going to be really important for us.
Yeah, so true. And a great example too of how, you know, depending what we incentivize impacts what people do and how they end up working. So Allison, I know that before moving into leadership positions, you were a NICU nurse and you were leading transport services at SickKids in Toronto. And I know, I think for most of us as clinicians, those frontline experiences really inform how we lead and how we see the system. I'm curious if you could tell us a bit about how those experiences inform your current work.
Yeah, it's been such a journey and such a privilege to provide point of care, frontline care. Care to patients and families. I often think about my physician partners and who are in leadership positions, and am a little bit envious that they are able to still practice their craft and to go to the well and experience firsthand that great privilege. I would say, to answer your question, that for me, it's really put a thumbprint, though, on my career and. You know, I can do now what I do because I did that first. And I think there's a real socialization that comes when you're providing point of care, frontline care to patients and families. And, you know, I think back to those early days, Catherine and NICU, and, you know, folks would say sometimes, you know, how can you do that work? And, you know, it's a place where miracles happen, and, you know, children will always inspire and amaze you. And I think, you know, I take that inspiration and amazement and you know, carry that with me. The opportunity that I had in 2003 when I was working at the Hospital for Sick Children and was the program director of the acute care transport team during SARS was a really interesting one because, you know, that was, you know, I think a good example of where I wasn't providing frontline care, but was supporting a team to do so. And, you know, that was certainly not like the pandemic, but in so much as we didn't know really what was going to happen, we were preparing for the worst. And so really those nurses and physicians and respiratory therapists were inspiring in terms of what they could do. And I realized at that point that my job was actually making sure that they could do what they needed to do. And I would say that has been a bit of a mantra for me as I move through my career, as I've moved through my career, and would say that very much was that feeling was very much present in that day in January when we made the decision to close doors. And, you know, we just needed to make sure that everyone was being taken care of and that teams could do what they needed to do. So I, you know, it's just something I carry with me, I think is the short answer.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just that compassion and passion for the people that you support that are delivering the care and that recognition that sometimes hard decisions need to be made. But ultimately, that's what we need to do is make sure care gets to people. I think that's so much the experience, right, of doing something like transport medicine, where there's lots of uncertainty and lots of unknowns. And it's really important to have had those frontline experiences to inform how we relate to people in leadership. So thank you for your work and for sharing your story with us today. And I can only imagine just how challenging the last over 2 years has been for folks like yourself who have tried to keep the system going, keep care getting to patients. And we really appreciate you sharing those reflections with us. So at this point, I'm going to move into some rapid fire questions. And there's no right or wrong answers here. This is the fun part. The hard work is now done. But tell us the first thing that comes to mind. So I'd like to start with, who has had the biggest influence on your career and why?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I think, as it turns out, I would be hard pressed to think of only one person, but I could name several people and give you, how about this? I'll give you one thing that has been an influence for each of them. So Mary Jo Haddad, who was the former CEO of SickKids, who actually hired me as a young new grad way back in 1987, I think influenced me greatly because I would hear her talk about influencing the life of a child. And that is something that that is a light that burns within me. Our former CEO, Michelle D'Emmanuel, certainly, who is just one of the smartest people, women I've ever met. Our current CEO, Carly Farrow, whom I would say I learn about leading with compassion on a daily basis. Sheila Jarvis, a former CEO of Holland Blurview Kids Rehab, just very elegant and I think really taught me the importance of really being meticulous about human resource practices. And then finally, my friend and colleague, Catherine Hayward Murray, who has just announced her retirement, actually, after 37 years with this organization. And she has roots within women's and children's, and I think has shown me how to be an effective leader and an effective nurse leader, and how you move through different channels and never lose your principles. So all of these incredible women, Catherine, I've been very, very fortunate to have been influenced by.
That's wonderful. What is one thing that you feel deeply grateful for right now?
I feel deeply grateful for the talented people I work with. You know, whether it was back in SARS and you know, reflecting back just now on the teams who were working on transport, there's just such a can-do. There's a roll up your sleeves. We've got to do this. And, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't reflect on and share with you rounding that I had done recently with the pediatric team. And they're, you know, it's really tough right now, right? It's not, those pediatric nurses are in a really tough spot. They've been providing care for adults. We've actually only had since March of 2020, 27 children who have been admitted for COVID. Obviously, there have been more kids we've looked after with COVID, but those numbers pale in comparison to the demand that we had and the care provision we provided to adults. And, you know, it's I'm grateful to them. And, you know, we've got to think about, as we take a step back, how we're going to take care of everybody. And that means our healthcare providers, as well as the patients and the community we serve.
Absolutely. The people in our system are really incredible. And it's wonderful to hear a leader like yourself who clearly sees that importance of focusing on the people that work with you and for you. What is the number one thing right now you think we need to consider to move children's healthcare forward in a positive direction?
I think, and I've believed this always, united, we have a stronger voice.
Oh, Allison, I totally agree. Never has there been a more important time to be united and work in teams as we move to transform healthcare, not only for children and youth, but really across this country. And I think there's just huge opportunities in front of us. Allison, I want to thank you for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you and hearing your experiences and the wisdom you've gained over a career of service in our healthcare system. To everyone who's listening, stay safe and be well. To stay up to date on all our Spark offerings, including upcoming podcast episodes, visit our website at childrenshealthcarecanada.ca and subscribe to our Spark news biweekly and e-bulletin if you haven't already. Thanks for listening to Spark Conversations. And before we go, show some love for your new podcast series by leaving us a review and then joining us again next month. Thank you, and hope to see you then.